231 accuracy.
There are a lot of people who lie and get away with it.
Over the North Atlantic, toward the east coast of the United States.
The United States is, as the dominant empire, is connected to all the other countries.
The other power is
just
collapsed, ready to collapse.
It's one small step for man.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
There are two different versions of that theory. One is that the government had some information about
it. Most people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
It's a mystery! It's a mystery wrapped in a riddle inside an enigma!
This week on Inside Jobs, Brian, Gene, and Lee investigate the assassination of Robert Kennedy.
Hello. On June 5th, 1968, after winning a make-or-break Democratic primary election in California, Robert Francis Kennedy thanked his supporters at the Ambassador Ballroom before being whisked into the hotel kitchen. Although he was surrounded by campaign staff, an assassin was able to get close to RFK and put three bullets in him, including a fatal headshot. Although 75 eyewitnesses saw the killing, discrepancies remain in the final story, and questions about the identity of a second gunman, as well as the motives of convicted killer Sirhan Sirhan, are unanswered to this day. Joining me to discuss the RFK assassination are civilian investigator Gene Francis O'Neill.
Gentlemen.
And conspiracy expert Lee Golden.
Good day to you, sirs.
I'm historian Brian Lane. Welcome to Inside Jobs. Guys, I just want to warn the audience that Gene is not at the top of his game, having seen the Lakers lose in their playoffs game just moments before.
I'm a little morose. Just a little.
It is pretty much the most tragic thing to occur to Californians since the assassination of RFK in our fine state of California.
Yeah, I would say that this is my generation's RFK.
Yeah, crushed your dreams.
It's lost today.
So in 40 years, is Emilio Estevez's son going to make a movie about this?
Yeah, he's going to have an imaginary sit-down conversation with President Barack Obama Jr. Sorry, Barack W. Obama. And he's going to ask him why we are hiding the evidence of a sixth basketball man that was playing for the other team.
Yeah, follow the chemtrails, guys.
Sorry, Brian, you didn't get that joke. See, basketball is played with five players on each.
Oh, I thought it was one-on-one. I've heard that saying. I've heard that saying one-on-one.
Yeah, that's a different kind of basketball. In this kind of basketball that I watch, it's 5-on-5. So a sixth basketball player would definitely be fishy.
What's the kind of basketball where it's like everyone has really big heads, and then when you shoot from one side of the court, it goes, from downtown, and then, ooh, ugly shot. What kind of basketball is that?
That's video game basketball.
Oh, okay.
Lee, you don't know anything about sports either.
I know about baseball. Baseball is my kind of sport because, you know, Jews, we love baseball because it's a sport, but it's very slow and there's lots of stats associated with it.
It's a sport that Jewish people can play.
Exactly. And that's why my team is the Oakland A's, because we have Moneyball as our sort of credo, which to me is the best way to play sports. It's like follow the money to first base.
When you hear the name Moneyball, just dollar signs clink into your eyes, right? And you pay attention?
Yeah, pretty much. I take the dollar sign out of my eye, throw it in the air, and then hit it with a nice Louisville slugger.
So one reason the A's can kind of get away with such a low payroll and maybe the occasional season of massive underperforming is that their fans can get off on all the money that they saved.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like
the team's not doing well, but look how much money we're saving.
Great season.
Well, that's the reason why I lived in Oakland as opposed to San Francisco for so many years. It's just because it's like the cheaper version of the Bay Area, just kind of like our Oakland A's are the cheaper version of Bay Area sports.
So instead of looking at like the home run leaders, you guys will look at the payroll.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh yeah, those are our boys.
Speaking of Oakland, Lee, would you like to promote your show that's going on next weekend?
Oh, sure. I will be performing at the Exit Theater in San Francisco, California. That's the rich man's Oakland. And, but this is in one of the most, it's a really nice kind of independent theater. The Fringe Festival's on there, but on the outside is the absolute fringe of society. Just crazy amounts of drugged out homeless people begging for anything you could imagine. And, once I was walking through the street there and I smelled the worst fart I've ever smelled from a particular homeless woman who had, you know, made that her home. The area in front of the Exit Theater here on Eddy Street, but I will be there.
So come on down.
So come on down and bring a gun.
And when is that? Which days and what time?
That'll be next Friday and Saturday. So I don't know. What's that, Brian? You seem to know about things. Don't you know what I'm doing next week?
next Friday and Saturday are the 26th and the 17th.
I don't think it could be the 26th and the 17th.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
26th
and high?
27th. Yeah. I don't know. Are you high?
26th and 27th. But what time? You have no idea what the time is?
Oh, 8 o'clock.
Okay.
First one who shows up gets a free drink on me.
Yeah. Also, if you mention Inside Jobs to Lee after the show, he'll buy you 5 drinks.
Yeah.
That's a guarantee.
Yeah, Brian and I are both backing that one up.
Okay.
Not monetarily. We're not backing it with our funds. We're just agreeing that Lee will do it.
Yeah, we're just vouching for Lee that he will do that.
Yeah, for sure. If this particular program gets someone to go into the Tenderloin and see some improv for $10, like, I'll give them whatever they want. You know what I mean?
We are not liable if you get murdered.
Oh, my Gamer337 is going to hunt me down.
Oh, no. Who is he?
Well, guys, I actually kind of did some research, and at about 3 in the morning, I woke up from kind of a hypnotic stupor and realized something. You want to know what it is?
I would.
Okay, take the number 337, okay?
Okay.
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 Now, turn it upside down.
Whoa!
Guys, I figured it out. I am Gamer337. He's my Tyler Durden, and I'm his Edward Norton.
Wow. Did you wake up from, like, a tortured slumber to make this realization?
Pretty much. Just like Sirhan Sirhan, I have no memory of writing that particular review on our iTunes account, but the L.A. Police Department has convinced me through hypnosis that I did, in fact, write that review.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's take that as our jumping off point to get into this case.
All right.
As I noted in the intro, Robert Kennedy was shot on June 5th, 1968 in the Ambassador Hotel kitchen. And all evidence seems to point to Sirhan Sirhan. But there are questions and discrepancies. Mm-hmm. And as Lee noted, it seems like he might have, you know, certain people think that he might have been a Manchurian candidate, mm-hmm. that he was hypnotized. He can't even remember going to the hotel. He was drunk already earlier that day. So it's quite a mystery that we have to get into here today.
And for for the uninitiated, Manchurian Candidate was a novel by Richard Condon and later a film starring Frank Sinatra that came out in 1960 about war hero who was actually programmed by the Soviets, the Koreans, the North Koreans, to kill a presidential candidate. And so it's become kind of the nomenclature for someone who is programmed to commit political violence as a Manchurian candidate.
Spoiler alert, Angela Lansbury is really scary in that movie.
Yeah. And Meryl Streep is good in the remake.
Wait, Meryl Streep was in the remake? She was the Angela Lansbury role?
She basically plays Hillary Clinton. Like, they have her all dolled up like Hillary Clinton. And
do you have to mention that Meryl Streep is good in something? It goes without saying.
Well, we've talked about Lee's obsession with the JFK assassination, and Lee, you were pretty deep in the RFK assassination as well, right?
I mean, I would say that not as much as the JFK case, but they're all sort of related, and they're kind of this trilogy, as it were, of political violence in the 1960s, beginning with JFK, culminating with RFK, and then, of course, a few mere weeks before RFK was the sort of Empire Strikes Back of the tragedy, the murder of the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes, well, as an expert in the JFK assassination, I think it would be only fair to Bobby Kennedy to kind of give a picture of his early life and how he rose to the position of being the possible Democratic candidate for president in 1968.
Good call.
So, the Kennedy family were from Boston. They were all, you know, the patriarch Joseph Kennedy was threw a lot of his weight around in that area. He had political connections. He spent time as the ambassador to England, mm-hmm. And that was in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge family. Gene, you might be able to fill us in on Irish Catholic families, but the men in the family all were sort of pressed into political consideration. The oldest, Joseph, followed by John, followed by Bobby Kennedy, followed by Edward Kennedy, or Ted.
They love to fuck the Irish.
They just love to fuck.
They love unprotected fucking.
Nice.
And Joe Kennedy, of the patriarch of the family, was quite an individual. He made his money in bootlegging during era of Prohibition. He was a movie producer. Had his hands in all sorts of different baskets.
Mm-hmm. And up until the beginning of World War II, it looked like Joe Kennedy Jr., his son, was going to be sort of the face of the Kennedy family, and he was going to be the one on whom all the political aspirations were placed. Unfortunately, in kind of one of the craziest missions you'll hear about.
Yeah, it was a total suicide mission.
Yeah, he died during an operation in World War II where he was supposed to fly a plane that was packed with explosives across the English Channel and then kamikaze it into an underground bunker after jumping out and parachuting to safety. Unfortunately, the plane just exploded.
Why did the Kennedys love suicide missions like that? Like, let's crash a plane into a Nazi base, or like, let's drive through Dallas in a limousine. Both just as stupid, I would say.
Yeah, the reason that they did that, planners came up with that idea was that, they had been bombing Nazi installations all over the coast and deeper in the continent, and so the Nazis had sort of wised up and figured out how to make these bunkers that were impervious to the to the kind of missiles that they had.
And that one was a dummy bunker. There was nothing in there, right?
Yeah, it was a dummy bunker.
It's the stupidest operation of all time.
Yeah, it's really tragic. But they were like, oh, if you fly the plane into the cave, it will explode and render it neutralized.
The reason why he did that stupid thing is because Joe, apparently, Joe Sr., told him in a letter that, hey, look, your little brother in the Pacific is outshining you in terms of heroics with his PT-109 derring do, so you better do something equally stupid as crashing your boat. He's like, oh, I'll crash a plane.
And after the plane exploded, they never tried to go after that bunker again because they realized how insane it was. So the only other military aged son during World War II was JFK. And as Lee just mentioned, he was a PT captain in the Pacific, where he became a noted war hero.
Mm-hmm.
Lee? I'm going to throw it to you
for the
specifics, because I can't remember how it starts.
Oh, okay. Well, he had this boat called PT-109, and, you know, he was kind of just rolling through the Pacific, and the ship got attacked, and they kind of started sinking, and so he jumped off the boat, and there were some people who couldn't help themselves, and so he dragged some guys back to land. I don't really know the specifics too much. There's like a movie.
What, they couldn't swim?
I guess. I don't really.
They were all wounded. They were wounded, and they eventually ended up being sheltered by natives. And Kennedy was able. It's like really stuff out of a movie.
They made a movie of it with Cliff Robertson. Actually,
they did. He took a coconut and he like carved a message into it. And
he took a volleyball and he made a face of it.
Wilson, Ira Wilson.
Well, yeah, he carved a message into the coconut, and then one of the indigenous people who was helping him out was able to get it to American military elsewhere, and they were able to save him. But yeah, he was wounded severely during that operation, suffered from chronic back pain basically every single day for the rest of his life until he died, and took a severe amount of medication for it, but... Yeah, those were the two Kennedy brothers that served in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And Teddy was much younger. I think he was born in like 33.
Yeah, he was a little 32. Kid.
32. Yeah, and then Bobby Kennedy was born. He joined the military right after World War II.
Didn't see
right after being born.
he rose from private to lieutenant baby in but he joined the military right after World War II, and he served actually on a naval ship that was named after his older brother in the Caribbean.
Yeah. I have one of those.
So
one
he
of those
probably
hats.
Got his own room.
Yeah, he had his own bunk is what it's called.
Oh, okay.
Oh, his own bunk.
In the Navy. But so JFK was sort of the new rising star in the family, seeing as Joe was dead. And so he, you know, got into politics, and he ran for Congress. And during that time, he was sent to China on a fact-finding mission while he was serving at Congress. And that's when Bobby, who was much younger than him, you know, they knew each other, obviously, as family members, but they weren't super close. But while JFK was in China, he invited Bobby along with him on this fact-finding mission to serve as his assistant. And apparently that's when they really bonded.
Yeah.
And that's when they became really close and sort of forged that that brotherly relationship that they were famous for in the coming decades.
And he eventually sort of ran his campaign for president and was his number one man, his real pit bull, as it was described. He would kind of go do the dirty work for Jack.
Yeah, it's kind of funny looking back on the way that Bobby Kennedy is remembered, because he's seen as being this real proponent of civil rights and this real defender of the poor, and you know.
But he wasn't like
that. He's sort of inextricably linked to.
He hated poor people.
well, he's sort of inextricably linked to Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
But it's crazy because, you know.
He didn't start out like that, though. He evolved once his brother was dead, and kind of realized after seeing such horrible violence to his own family that violence was not the way, and that we needed to pull out of Vietnam and work together.
Yeah. If you look at, likely said, he was sort of JFK's attack dog, and he did things that, looking back on them, are just insane.
Pretty sketch.
Super sketch. Including authorizing the FBI to
spy on MLK.
Yeah, certainly.
That's because they were blackmailed by Hoover, though. J. Edgar Hoover had compromising photos of JFK, like, coming out of some floozy's apartment, and basically said, we're going to release these unless you... you know, let us monitor MLK and RFK, you know, kind of begrudgingly obliged.
Sure. But I mean, looking.
Yeah, it's sketch, bro.
It's super sketch. He was also, if you look at sort of secret tapes about, Ziem, who was assassinated just weeks before his brother in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Or Lumumba, who was the leader of the Congo. Bobby Kennedy's always the hardliner.
Yeah.
Which is very, very surprising given his latter status and views.
Well, he went through a Great Depression after seeing his brother, you know, cut down in his prime. And, you know, he was out of the public sphere for a while and really mourned very, very hard, probably even more so than Jackie did in a way. And when he came back out of this stupor, he was this amazing advocate for peace and the disenfranchised.
Yeah, so let's...
Yeah, he was the one... Oh, I was just going to say how after his brother's assassination, he really helped get that no assassinating the president law signed.
There actually wasn't. There was no, like, federal law against... I mean, there's murder, obviously, but nothing that said you couldn't assassinate the president. Or that it was any worse than murder, I guess.
Yeah, because, I mean, really, what are the murder laws going to do to discourage a presidential assassin? Not much.
So let's really focus on
RFK.
The JFK assassination and Bobby's reaction to it. He was the attorney general. He had been his brother's fiercest defender in the White House. He was especially active and remembered for his role during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And he was at odds is kind of the easiest way to say it, but he and LBJ really didn't like each other.
Oh, yeah. Bitter rivalry.
When John wanted to offer the vice presidential spot on the ticket in 1960 to LBJ, Bobby was fiercely against it and didn't think he was actually going to go through with it.
Yeah.
But, he really didn't like LBJ. And so when his brother was shot, the cabinet pretty much stayed together, but Bobby Kennedy had such a problem dealing with LBJ and working alongside him that he left fairly shortly after the assassination. I think it was about 8 months that he finally left.
And public opinion was kind of like, people sort of felt like the natural successor to the presidency was Bobby. When LBJ took over, everyone's kind of like, wow, they kind of felt like Bobby was in charge now. And that kind of sentiment among many Americans eventually led to him, joining in on the presidential primary race of 68, which ultimately led to his demise, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was only 38 when his brother died, which is, you know, very young. He was the youngest attorney general ever, and he was this bright face in politics. And after his brother died, he did a lot of soul-searching stuff before he started recording. Lee and I talked about how he climbed a mountain.
Why is that funny? I just imagine, like, as he's climbing...
Why is that funny?
I don't know why. It seems like the most depressing, like... He must have been just super depressed, and he was just like, gonna climb the mountain, John. But, this mountain was named after him in Canada, and he climbed it and, like, left.
Do you think he got to the top of the mountain and shouted, like, Rocky during Rocky IV when he was training to fight Ivan Drago?
Just went, Jackie!
When he got to the top, one of the mementos he left was JFK's inaugural speech.
Oh, really?
So maybe he delivered that to the mountain air.
JFK had the eye of the tiger.
Wait, so if you climb that mountain, the speech might be, you might find the speech?
You might find the ghost of all the Kennedys. That might be where they all haunt.
He didn't advertise it, but he left an insane collection of pogs up there, too. Like crazy rare slammers.
That one slammer that's based off of the JFK half dollar.
Yes!
Interesting.
Or that one that's a no fear, but it's misspelled.
So he in 1964, he ran for the Senate as senator from New York. And people were kind of critical of him because they thought he was a carpetbagger, and he was just going to use this as a springboard to run for the presidency.
What is a carpetbagger again? It refers to after the Civil War, right? The people had these carpet bags that took up a bunch of land after the Civil War, right?
No. It's people who packed up their belongings in a carpet bag and moved down to the South to take advantage of all of the jobs that the government was giving to Northerners and Northern sympathizers. So, like, being a teacher, going down to the South and teaching blacks that they have the right to vote.
That's a strange detail to focus on and turn into a derogatory.
It's not...
Like, oh, look at Mr. Luggage!
Well, they're focusing on that.
Too good for a trash bin!
Point taken.
1 point to Mr. O'Neill.
Well, if it's old Mr. Shoes.
Too good for walking around barefoot with rickets, yeah. I see.
Too good for using dead frogs as shoes, I see.
So RFK was a carpetbagger who ran for the Senate out of New York. And
His mom introduced him, too, when he announced his candidacy. Have you ever seen that footage?
She was America's widow at that point. Everybody loved her.
Wait, Mrs. Kennedy or...
No, his mom.
Wait, which Mrs....
Bobby's mom.
Wasn't Jackie O America's widow?
Yeah. Oh, I guess maybe they both were, because Joe Kennedy was dead.
There's all these crazy theories that they boned, like, after...
Man, how sad that Jackie O and Jack's mom are fighting over who's America's widow.
Yeah, and who got to bone RFK.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Let's get to that in a second. RFK won the seat, and people were worried that he was just going to use it as a springboard for the presidency.
Just a springboard into Jackie's nethers. Because that's the thing, when you become, it's like law. We were talking about off air, like when your brother gets killed, you have to like take his sister-in-law as your wife, right?
Yeah, support the widow.
Yeah.
But he pointed out that at the time in 1964, when he was running, LBJ was the president, Democratic president, and he was able to run not only in 64, but also in 68. And so at the time he was saying, you know, I'm hoping that this president will win and then win again in 68. So the earliest I could possibly be, running is 1972. And I have a lot of, you know, legislation that I want to pass until then.
Yeah.
Of course.
Like the Robert F. Kennedy must be president if he runs.
because the situation's changed before 1968, he actually didn't end up passing, which led to his subsequent assassination. He became senator, and it seems like he spent most of his time in life just fucking. Because not only had he boned Marilyn Monroe.
And guys, please, made love to
not only had he coupled with Marilyn Monroe, but he knew Jackie O biblically. And
that's hearsay. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily true. A lot of the people who have claimed that have been discredited, but it is kind of a salacious rumor that I really hope is true, just for the softcore porn possibilities.
Yeah. But okay, so Lee, I think you might know this, but Gene might not. So I'm going to quiz Gene.
Gene,
how many children did RFK have?
Trick question. He had no kids.
No, that's very wrong. He had 11 children.
Different mothers?
No, his wife was just constantly...
Racially, he was pretty cool.
Brant, we'll show you the details.
You know what's great is that I started an Ancestry.com trial account, and in order to show you how to make a family tree, guess what the example family tree is?
I want to guess.
Hitler.
Ooh.
Hitler, it just goes to Hitler to his cousin.
Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan, that's pretty hard.
The Kennedys, actually. It's like a family tree of the Kennedys. And it's...
Oh, it's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's exactly what we thought.
And you can kind of see, you know, the Fitzgeralds. There's a guy named Honey Fitz.
Does it show the inbreeding?
Yeah, it kind of just goes around in circles. It's more like a family bush.
Kind of like the O'Neill family.
Yeah. The family tree is really just like, is really more of a palm tree.
I thought you were talking about the Shaquille O'Neal family tree. You're related to him though, right, Gene?
You know, in, I th- think high school or grade school, I forget what it was, but I actually managed, yeah, it was grade school, I actually managed to convince my class that Shaquille O'Neal was my cousin by adoption.
Even though his last name is spelled differently.
Spelled differently, yeah. Yeah.
You were also told that the surfing company was a distant cousin as well.
Yes, I was related to the surfing company. No, that was my uncle.
Uncle O'Neal, the surfing company.
Yeah.
But yeah, RFK was just constantly fucking. He had 11 children. Rory, the final one, wasn't even born when he died. But yeah, I don't know how.
Do they like squeeze a quick one
wait,
in?
Wait, so
right
Robert
after he got
Kennedy's.
Shot?
Yeah. His ghost was still fucking.
They did a lot of pottery together.
But yeah, he spent his time as a senator sort of championing a lot of the things that he was later known for, like the plight of the impoverished, the plight of African Americans. He was a big supporter of civil rights, and he actually sort of came to terms with Martin Luther King and really supported him as well.
Yeah. He put on like a nice wiretap. Like he edited together the wiretap, so it made him sound really, really cool.
Yeah, he just put the wiretap together where MLK is talking about how he's like really good at skateboarding and like he has a really good collection of tech decks.
His MLK's family member left that on top of the mountain named after him in Canada. It's all his tech decks.
But so 1968 rolls around, and as we discussed in the Nixon episode,
you just do a line of coke.
I gotta get ready for these guys. No, LBJ was in a really bad spot with Vietnam and the rioting that was happening all over the country. And in a surprise announcement, he said that he would not run for the Democratic nomination of 1968.
He will not seek nor accept your nomination.
Right. Famous Sherman refusal.
And by,
he wanted to wait till things calmed down in the country.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
And when you mean he was in the wrong spot in Vietnam, that means that he was in Vietnam.
He was hooked on Hanoi heroin.
Yeah.
Committing me lies every day.
Staring at the fan and breaking mirrors.
But let me tell you, that LBJ, he'd love you long time.
Yeah, well, that's actually what the Spanish-speaking prostitutes used to call Lyndon Baines Johnson.
LBJ.
Yeah, LBJ, exactly.
Yeah.
Commonly known historical facts.
The guy had a hog like a prize winner.
Apparently he was like the John Hamm of the presidency.
Yeah, he had the biggest presidential penis on record.
Yeah. There's actually a famous audio tape that you can find, probably on YouTube.
Where he's LBJ, getting a suit ordered, and he's talking about how he needs enough room for his cock and balls.
I think he calls it his Texas hog.
Okay, do you know the Book of Secrets from one of those like National Treasure movies? That they find like a Book of Secrets, presidential secrets in the National Archives or something?
National Treasure 2, Book of Shadows.
Book of Secrets. It's like presidential secret
book. Secrets.
And I bet there's like a couple of pages where it's like all the presidents just like trace their dick in the book. And so like the next president can like see where he sort of pans out.
Yeah. James Madison was only 5'4", but his dick was 4 feet long.
And Taft had a micro P, right?
Yeah. Taft had the MP. It was hidden by his lard.
It was an innie.
It was a gene.
Yeah.
Anyway, horrible, tragic, historical event.
Ugh, focus up, people.
Do some more coke, Brian.
Brian's having a heart attack up top.
So RFK decided to run, having seen that LBJ wasn't gonna make the run, and that his opponent would be Nixon. And if we know one thing, it's that Kennedy's always beat Nixon. So
in the political Rochambeau.
And so he started running, and he started campaigning all around the country. And
it actually wasn't really a shoe-in for him.
Yeah.
He was up against Hubert Humphrey.
Came into the primary a little late.
Yeah, came into the primary a little late, and he wasn't doing so
hot. He was behind on delegates even after winning the primary in California that night. But he would have probably pulled it through.
That's a sort of a bigger question than we can get into because it's like
exactly
boring.
Yeah, and of the historical what ifs, you know.
Would Robert F. Kennedy have gotten enough delegates?
Yeah, it sounds like the beginning of
that's a whole other episode.
That's like the Phantom Menace episode of the Kennedy story.
We should release bonus content where we speak for hours about RFK's delegate. It'll be $1.99 in the iTunes store. Look under audiobooks. So he was kind of up against it, and California was really a make or break campaign for him. And so when he found out he won, people were going nuts. There's video footage of him at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles speaking to all these supporters, and he says, well, we won this, and we're going to take it to Chicago, and we're going to win it there.
And he says that he's trying to say that we're a selfless country, but at one point he goes, we're a selfish country.
Yeah, he does.
It's awesome. It's awesome how they try to edit around that whenever they show that final footage.
But, we are the worst country in the world. I'm the best.
Fuck this shithole. They killed my brother.
Such a Biden right there.
He was just trying to run so that he could get access to the secret files and figure out who actually shot his brother.
And put his dick in that book.
D in the book.
I just want to put my dick in that book.
D in the book. Find out who shot Jack.
Also, the guy who plays the president in that movie is the same guy who plays the president in that 13 Days movie.
In what movie?
In the Book of Secrets movie. That guy's like
yeah,
the
that's
new.
That's right.
It's the new Bruce Greenwood is the new Martin Sheen.
Yeah, he's also in the Star Trek movies as John F. Kennedy.
Is he really? So is he like the rich little for John F. Kennedy?
He pretty much is. Yeah.
The thing is, he doesn't really look that much like him.
Not at all.
He can just kind of do his hair, right?
Yeah,
he looks like Greg Kinnear, really.
The Stephen Culp, who played RFK in 13 Days, is a dead ringer.
Oh, that guy's great.
Yeah. So after the speech, his campaign staff was like, oh, we need to take him this way, we need to take him this other way. There was
no security guards, really. There was like one guy and then a couple of athletes that were assigned to him, and there's no cops in the building either.
Yeah, they were supposed to take him to a press conference, but there was confusion among the people who were supposed to guide him. And so this guy, Carl Euchre, Bob Euchre's brother.
Wait, are you serious?
No.
That's the one thing that Brian knows about sports is that guy's not Bob Euchre's brother.
That would have been fantastic.
Wait, Bob Euchre's not from sports, is he?
He's from Major League.
Oh,
yeah, okay. He played for the Milwaukee Brewers, and then he was the Milwaukee Brewers announcer.
Oh, okay. And the announcer for Major League. Okay. The drunk
one,
right? I
think he still is.
And then
he's still there on the set announcing.
Yeah.
When are we going to get
probably
this?
Probably do another one of these.
When are we going to get this fourth one going? Man, he was also in Mr. Belvedere.
He was also in Mr. Belvedere.
God, what is it with you guys in Mr. fucking Belvedere?
It's the greatest television theme song of all time.
It's such a good theme song.
Even better than Greatest American Hero?
Oh, way better.
Oh, really? Get the fuck out of here.
Greatest American Hero isn't even in the top five. What about Perfect Strangers?
Yeah.
That's
It's basically what? It's probably Perfect Strangers.
Ghostbusters.
Mr. Belvedere. Ghostbusters? Yeah, maybe. Different strokes.
Yeah. Cheers is solid as hell.
What about Moving On Up from the Jeffersons? Cheers. Come on.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's just okay.
That was what Bobby Kennedy believed in. I think today black people and white people should all be given a chance to move it on up to the east side.
Did you really say that?
No.
That was an audio recording that we played of his final speech.
He also said this later in the thing. if you want to listen to my podcast on iTunes, we just started it, and we'd appreciate the 5 stars.
Wow, how do you know iTunes was going to be a thing?
They were visionaries in the Kennedys.
Yeah, they really were.
Except for Teddy.
No, except for the mentally incapacitated one.
Oh, the one that they gave a, what's
a Labatt to.
A Labatt.
Okay, so let's get him dead, and then we'll take
Let's get to the case
let's
here.
Let's kill this fucker.
Yeah, let's watch him cut this fat bastard up.
So, even though he was, you know...
Wait. I was gonna say...
Oh, okay.
They started to lead him to the kitchen, and they had... The crew with him is ridiculous. It's Bob Uecker's brother, George Plimpton.
Yeah, George Plimpton was there.
And Rosie Greer, this, like, huge rights activist. Player.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
Man, it's too bad George Plimpton didn't have his falcon.
Oh, yes. Oh, man, you got to it first.
And so they let him back into this kitchen where it was all the staff, and it's this hot, functioning kitchen in the hotel. Yeah. It's really cramped. There's a lot of tight corners.
Lawrence Fishburne is there. A lot of steam tables.
Larry, he was known at, yeah. as at the time.
And there was a weird thing written on the wall that was like something about the man, the once and future king was written on the wall, right?
Yeah. Which is pretty good, but it's no Who Watches the Watchmen.
yeah, exactly.
But so Euchre is holding his wrist and sort of leading him in to this group of kitchen staff, reporters, and well-wishers.
Rorschach is holding his other wrist.
Rorschach is breaking his finger for information about where the comedian is. And he leads him back there. He's shaking hands, and then a gun pops out of the crowd and fires three shots. The first one right into Kennedy's head. And then a couple more in his armpit and shoulder. And all these people, there's, you know, a famous picture of George Plimpton trying to tackle
with
Sir
his video
Sir
falcon.
And so he tackles, they tackled Sirhan Sirhan, and when RFK was shot, he was in the middle of shaking hands with a busboy, and there's a very famous photograph of him, you know, dying on the kitchen floor while this kid, he was only 17,
tried to kiss him.
He hands him a rosary, a Catholic rosary.
Well, he had to kiss him to absorb his soul.
Yeah. No, he put his
and that little boy that kissed Joe Kennedy.
He put his hand on Kennedy's or head. Kennedy put his hand on his head and said, "Remember."
Earn this. Oh man, this is terrible. So it's actually pretty sad. One of his campaign staff came to him, and RFK's last words were,
"Is everyone all right?"
Is everyone else all right?
And everyone else survived, right?
Yeah,
a bunch of people got shot though.
Yeah, they're like, everybody is fine except for you.
and yeah, indeed, he struggled for many hours, and the next day
died a good Samaritan while Ethel got to listen to his heartbeat one more time.
So he passed away surrounded by his loved ones, and one of his aides, Frank Mankiewicz, walked over to where the press were located, and he read a brief announcement, which I will read now. I have a short announcement to read, which I will read at this time. Senator Robert Francis Kennedy died at 1:44 a.m. today, June 6, 1968. With Senator Kennedy at the time of his death were his wife Ethel, his sisters Mrs. Stephen Smith, Mrs. Patricia Lawford, his brother-in-law Mr. Stephen Smith, and his sister-in-law Mrs. John F. Kennedy. He was 42 years old. Thank you.
And Lawford, that name might sound familiar because she actually married Peter Lawford, who was one of the Rat Pack, you know, of course, Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. And who's the cool guy?
Dean Martin.
I mean, I guess they're all pretty cool.
And Joey Bishop.
Right.
Regis Philbin.
Matt Damon.
Han Solo. Michael Anthony Hall.
Carrot Top.
And Lawford. They were once
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Well, once they were having this party out, I think at Sammy Davis's Jr.'s house or something, and everyone was like boning chicks, call girls in the pool, and apparently Kennedy like threw his back out while boning some chick in the pool. And like all of the Kenny Powers and all those dudes, they were all like, you know, partying with Kennedy. And then Lawford was out like in the desert trying to bang this girl. He was so drunk and she basically wouldn't have it. He like basically tried to rape her. She got away. And then he was like out in the desert howling like a jackal.
Holy
looking
shit.
Looking for his spirit animal?
Yeah.
That's a bonus episode.
I know. I want to party with the Kennedys so bad. Like, if I had a time machine and people were like, okay, where would you go? You could go to any time. You could go any place, talk to anyone, meet anybody. I'm like, I want to party with the Rat Pack and the Kennedys. It sounds great.
Mayor Yorty has just sent me a message that we've been here too long already. My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there. Thank you.
We're back on Inside Jobs with Brian, Gene, and Lee discussing who killed RFK.
Sounds like Casey Kasem is doing
it. Is he still alive?
Yeah, I think so.
Huh. That's strange.
Dick
Clark is dead.
Yeah, Dick Clark is dead, but Casey Kasem is determined to outlive the cast of Saved by the Bell.
The man they apprehended and many saw commit the crime was a Palestinian-American known as Sirhan Sirhan.
Now,
this is one
was
of those
he named
Christian...
after the band, or was the band named after him?
He was named after the band Dead Kennedys.
Okay.
And when we say Palestinian-American, we mean Christian. So, you know, not all bad.
Yeah, the good kind of Palestinian.
But yeah, no, so he was tackled by all the people in the kitchen and arrested, and that is where the mystery started.
He was in a haze, you know, he later would say he was in some sort of dissociative fugue, and at the time, people said that his like, eyes were dilated, and he looked like he was just high or something like that, and he had like 4 Tom Collins right before the assassination.
What is a Tom Collins?
It's a weird drink from the 60s. In 70s that people used to drink before they invented the Harvey Wallbanger.
Before they invented Sailor Jerry and Coke Zero.
Before they invented the slippery nipple.
Yeah. There's a dumb drink for every generation.
He'd had a couple of blowjobs earlier that night.
A Tom Collins, guys, is gin, lemon juice, sugar, and carbonated water.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 1960s.
So, yeah.
It was like the syrup of its time.
I mean, the fact that he was drinking a gin-based drink should be evidence enough that this guy wasn't all the way there. Gin is the worst alcohol in existence.
Oh, I think it's got one on tequila.
No, tequila is drinkable. Tequila doesn't taste like sour toilet water.
Yeah, Brian, you're just revealing your racism right now.
Yeah.
Against
That's what I do every episode. Didn't I just insult Muslims two minutes ago?
So Sirhan Sirhan had this journal that apparently had all this stuff about that was ranting against RFK and against Israel and wrote RFK must die. And he was really upset at RFK, he says to this day, because RFK was supposed to be the champion of the little people, you know, the disenfranchised, and he really looked up to RFK. But RFK was supportive of Israel and of giving munitions and arms to Israel. And Sirhan Sirhan, as a Palestinian born individual, saw this as his hero RFK being on the wrong side of history. That if he was supposed to be this person for the disenfranchised, why wasn't he there for the disenfranchised Palestinians who had, you know, many of them cast out of their homes when the nation of Israel was established in 48? And the night of the assassination was the anniversary of the war, and there was many Jewish individuals in Los Angeles that
hold
were
on,
celebrating
hold on.
That.
If you're talking about Israel, you can't just say the war.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It was the 1967 war.
Because Israel had like 8 wars that week alone.
Exactly.
It won them all.
Yeah, you're right, Brian. It was the 1 year anniversary for the 67 war, and then 68 was the 20-year anniversary of the Israeli independence. But yeah, he was upset about the 1 year anniversary. You're right.
He claimed later that he can't remember writing any of that in the notebook.
Yeah.
And that he
was in some fugue state, basically, and doesn't remember anything.
Basically a fugue state, which you might remember from Breaking Bad. Basically he said he couldn't remember writing any of this. He admitted that it was his handwriting. He admitted that it was in his possession, but he could not remember why, having written it. And so basically earlier that day, he owned a gun.
Ivor Johnson, Cadet 55, little revolver.
Wow. And, he owned that, and he had gone to a shooting range to practice. He saw a friend. He invited that friend out, and he declined. And then this is where it starts to get kind of odd, because he was not a drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, he didn't drink.
He went to a bar and drank for Tom Collins. So, you know, safe to say he was probably a little bit
wasted.
Out of it, to say the least. And then the next evidence we have of him is he's in the kitchen being tackled after shooting Kennedy. But other people who were there that night saw another suspect, or at least a person of interest. And that was the girl in the polka dot dress.
Yeah.
And, this was a girl who was wearing a white dress with either violet or black polka dots on it, and like a ruffled collar.
Mm-hmm.
Who
many people saw. That evening, but the police later coerced them into saying that they didn't see this person.
Yeah, and this isn't one of the cases where it's like, the conspiracy, the police coerced them, they must have, there's no record. There's actually audio recording
of, like, if you really care about RFK, then you will just lie and say you didn't see this person.
Yeah, a Kennedy volunteer who was sitting in a fire escape after he announced that he had won the primary, saw this woman run by with two men she described as being Mexican Americans, and the woman was saying, "We got him, we got him." And when she asked who, the girl said, "We shot the senator." And
so this woman just told a curious passerby, like, "Excuse me, ma'am," frantically running away. When you said we got him. Who are you talking about? Oh, the president, the senator that we just shot. I have to go.
And who runs down the stairs like, "Conspiracy, we just committed a conspiracy. Everyone clear out the way. We just murdered someone."
Yeah.
Well,
what she was talking about, and she said,
Mark David Chapman said, "I just shot John Lennon," after he shot John Lennon.
He was just trying to get a book deal.
But he wanted, but he wanted people to know that he shot John Lennon.
Did he? Did he really?
Yeah, he wanted to be famous for that.
Right? Oh, that's right. He wanted to be famous for that.
Yeah.
That Kennedy volunteer saw this polka dot dress woman, and several other people claimed that they saw her as well, and they all described the same kind of clothing. And as we noted, the police really told them that they didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a curious aspect of the assassination, on top of the fact that Sirhan claims that he can't remember anything.
Yeah.
Next is that Sirhan emptied his gun.
Eight shots.
And a lot of people were hit all around the room.
Yeah.
Including by ricochets. But if you take a look at Kennedy's height and Sirhan's height, and Sirhan was a very short guy. I think he was like 5'3". And then people have measured the angle of the bullet holes in, for instance, the ceiling and the wall.
He would have had to have been at point blank range.
Yeah, he would have had to be at point blank range, which is what the police contend happened. However, all the witnesses, including Kennedy staffers who were right next to him, say that he was at least at least several feet away.
Exactly.
As opposed to the like inch that the police have him standing.
And the audio recording, if you analyze some audio that is of the incident, some people purport that you can hear up to 13 shots, which of course doesn't make sense because there's only 8 guns in an Ivor Johnson and you didn't have time to reload. But additionally, there are some shots that seem on the recording like they're happening right on top of each other, and they went out and did some tests of an Ivor Johnson 55 and found that found that they couldn't have fired that quickly. But there was at least one other gun known to be in the room that one of the
Kennedy's huge dick.
Yeah. Some guy who would later go on to work for the Hughes Corporation, Howard Hughes Corporation, he had a pistol. Police asked him about it, and he said, I sold it before the assassination, but there's evidence, basically a receipt that shows that he sold it to another guy a couple months after the assassination.
So we have possible accomplices, the accused shooter claims that he can't remember it, awkward angles of fire and bullet holes in the walls, conflicting witness reports, and definitely a second gun somewhere in the room.
Yeah, they don't know if it fired. They didn't find any bullets from that. They did find that the bullets in Kennedy had a certain type of rifling, and the other guy's gun matches that type of rifling, apparently. I don't know a lot about ballistics, but that's something that I've heard.
Every single gun leaves a different trace on the bullets that it fires. Mm-hmm. And rifling is this kind of like spiral pattern that is carved into the barrel of the interior of the gun.
Got it.
And that causes the bullet to spin, which increases its accuracy.
Oh, okay. So those matched.
Apparently. Ladies, I'm single.
Know a lot about Nazis and guns, and I do a podcast.
Now, Brian's going to go back to his bunker before Obama takes his guns away.
One theory is that this guy with the gun saw Sirhan pull out his gun and then started firing away, accidentally caused additional damage, possibly the murder of the senator, and then was like, whoops, and sort of put his gun away. So that's one of the theories. And then the aforementioned theory that he was a Manchurian candidate, Sirhan Sirhan, was programmed to do this, which is why he doesn't remember.
In preparation for this episode, I watched the movie RFK Must Die.
Oh, yeah. It's a good flick.
Which I cannot... No, I cannot recommend it. It is ridiculous.
It is pretty... There's a bunch of weird mind control stuff and weird clips from this 1960s movie about hypnotism. It's pretty much bullshit, but I think you should watch it. It's fun.
I mean, there was definitely a part where a guy was like, to me, all the evidence points to the fact that he was programmed to shoot Kennedy and then programmed to forget he was programmed.
Yeah, that is a great line.
Which is just like the most ridiculous thing. And then he was programmed to forget he was programmed to forget he was programmed.
The thing about that documentary is that everyone they interview, they just kind of seem like they don't even believe what they're saying. Like, there's showing like photographs of someone. This actually might be something else that this director did. I've seen him do other interviews, and he's like interviewed people about it, and he's like, does this man in the photograph then at the Ambassador Hotel match that man that you saw those years ago from the CIA? Leading all these incredibly leading questions. And
I was talking to Gene while I was watching it, and there's literally a part where he's like, so you worked with David Morales in Cuba in the 1950s, correct? And the guy's like, yeah. Let me show you a picture. And then it's a shot from the ambassador lobby.
Yeah, and he's like, is that the guy?
Is that the guy? And the guy immediately, that's him. Totally know it.
But he seems like he's full of shit, though.
It's this guy you haven't seen in 50 years.
Don't even look anything like
and
the guy.
Barely knew him.
Guys, did you see Zodiac? You never forget a face when it's connected to murder.
Yeah, so the guy, Shane O'Sullivan, he's kind of become famous championing the conspiracy angle of the RFK murder.
In the movie, he says authority when he's talking about authority. It's great.
Yeah, he's Irish.
He didn't have the authority. So do that.
And film, which is weird. If we have any Irish listeners, I just want to say, I don't know why film has 2 syllables in your accent. Gene?
Phil? Wait, go ahead. Say it.
Our Irish connection.
How do Irish people say it?
Film.
Yeah, I don't know what our deal is there. Phelim.
Too busy fucking to learn how to speak.
Yeah.
Irish, the Jews of Europe.
They're not Roma. But yeah, no, so he sort of championed this, and he was the director of that RFK Must Die movie, and one of the theories...
Really good title.
Yeah, well, it's taken from
His diaries, yeah.
Yeah, from Sirhan's diaries.
But it does seem like someone wrote the title in a crayon.
Anyway, his theory is that he studied a lot of footage from newscasts and...
A lot of film.
A lot of film from local broadcasters of the rally well before the shooting, up until the audience learns what has happened. And he identifies a couple men, including one who's like kind of a darker complexioned guy, and he has identified him as David Morales, this CIA officer. Yeah, so he identifies him and then these other people. And the theory, I mean, the other stuff is kind of interesting. These people with no, you know, nothing really to gain, who were just witnesses to the event, who saw a woman in a polka dot dress and claimed this happened. And that's corroborated by other witnesses. But O'Sullivan is like, yeah, look at these people.
There were CIA people there.
He has this grainy footage of, like, you know, a kind of tall, dark-complexioned guy and a bald guy. And he asserts that they are these CIA operatives. And then when he learns that they are accounted for as being at the hotel that night as representatives from a watch company, he's just like, maybe these were their front identities provided to them by the CIA. And,
You know what's funny about the interviews with Sirhan is they did like a David Frost interview in the 80s, and midway through the interview, many times Sirhan's like, can we start over? Can you cut that out? Can you take that out? Like trying to control the interview, and then they just leave it in. It's really awesome and awkward.
Well, he did have final edit.
Yeah.
It's really weird when he says, if the president does it, that means it isn't illegal.
He was programmed to request final edit in all of his interviews.
And then forget that he requested it.
And then programmed to forget. sorry, Lee, what is interesting that he says during that interview?
Oh, he calls the Average Johnson a hot piece, and then he turns to the camera and goes, okay, take that out. It's not exactly, but he's trying to rehabilitate his character and like get parole. So it doesn't exactly sound great when he's like, yeah, I got this hot piece that I don't remember shooting this guy. I wrote a diary about how much I hated.
So Sirhan was convicted, even though he tried to, you know, plead that it was, like self-defense.
Yeah,
As Kennedy had supported this arms deal to Israel,
Robert and Kennedy was going to shoot him.
Yeah, I think it's like an imminence plea.
Yeah, the only reason why he didn't get the death penalty is because they took that away in California before he was going to die. So that's the only reason why he's still alive to this day.
Same reason Charlie Manson is still alive.
All the good.
We should get those
saved.
Guys together. It's not a band.
But yeah, no, he was convicted, and he has lost 13 appeals, or not, sorry, not appeals. He has lost 13 attempts to get parole since that time.
Every day he goes in, he says, not a day goes by that I don't remember that stupid kid who did that night.
One of these days he's going to beat Andy Dufresne there on the beach. One of these days.
Say what, Taneo?
I've been known to locate certain guns from time to time.
You know, based on all this evidence, I personally don't think any of the O'Sullivan material in RFK Must Die is worthwhile.
It's entertaining, but it's horseshit.
Well, I disagree. I think it's entirely admissible.
Yes. And Gene is the authority on it.
Well, yeah, let me ask you. So, Gene, inside job.
Yeah. This just reeks of inside job.
Who do you think was behind it?
The government.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And so
I think the CIA
Manchurian Candidate did him and programmed him to carry out the assassination and programmed him to forget that he carried out the assassination.
And so you're saying definitely a conspiracy?
Absolutely a conspiracy.
All right, Lee, do you think it was an inside job?
The murder was conducted inside a building.
Good point.
So in that case, it was an inside job.
But he wasn't paid to do it, so that wouldn't be a job.
Yeah, okay, you're right. It was,
you can do a job for free, it's just not professional.
No, paid work. That's what a job is.
So it was inside amateur. So, you know, there's some fishy stuff. Like Thomas Noguchi was the...
Ooh, I love that amateur shit.
Yeah. Thomas Noguchi was the coroner who later became the...
Ooh, hidden camera.
Mmm, upskirt. Ah, nip slips.
All right, you guys. You guys
I'm so
encourage
sorry.
Your ball. So Noguchi, yeah, Noguchi got taken off the case, then fought to get back on, and once Noguchi, Thomas Noguchi, famed coroner from L.A., who's, you know, he also did the autopsy of what's her name,
Marilyn Monroe,
yeah, and the guy who the guy who got Christopher OJ. Walken, and yeah, did O.J. yeah, and then
Chris Farley,
Thomas Noguchi, coroner to the stars.
Exactly. And Natalie Wood, that's what I'm trying to think of.
Yeah,
Natalie
apparently
Wood.
he has a book, and it's actually fairly interesting.
And it's actually called
some shit.
Coroner to the Stars. Hi, I'm Thomas Noguchi. You may remember me from such deaths as Natalie Wood's drowning.
I'm
He's like, I got
Troy
a space
McClure.
Lined up for Lindsay Lohan. Come on.
Lindsay Lohan, who's in the movie Bobby, who has sex with Frodo so that he doesn't have to go to Vietnam.
That's how that works? You could just have sex with a woman and not go to Vietnam?
That line works? I tried that line. I tried to convince a woman that I was Frodo, and if I didn't have sex that night, I was going to go to Vietnam. She didn't believe it, but I guess it's all in the delivery.
Wow.
Well, you know,
So sorry, Lee, what were you saying about the Noguchi?
So the Noguchi, they kind of threw him off the case because they said he wasn't doing right, but I think they might have thrown him off because he was trying to
getting too close to the truth.
Getting too close to the truth. He was following the chemtrails. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's any conclusive proof that he was anybody else other than the Sirhan guy, who, you know, I've always kind of given the benefit of the doubt and wanted to believe him. But in rewatching his interviews and listening to his tale, I'm kind of just like, you know what? Fuck this guy. I think he did it. So.
Yeah. Watching him speak, I didn't see specifically those David Frost interviews, but watching him speak at any time, it's just like, oh man,
he's full of shit. He's
just
trying to
lying.
Just trying to get an excuse. Like, well, I mean, they convinced me I did it. I don't remember. I'm not responsible, but I did hate him and he did kind of deserve it. But you know, oh, I had a hot piece. Don't record that. Like, just kind of like, fuck you, dude. You know what? For the sake of national healing, why don't you just fess the fuck up? Either you did it or you don't. You didn't. Either you did it or you didn't. And I feel bad that it's kind of related to Israel and all that. And, it's, you know, someone who's been to Israel and is a Jewish person and wants peace. It's kind of sad that he doesn't just come out and say that that's why he did it. And, you know, even though he committed this thing, I don't hate him. You know, I'd like to have peace with, you know, have peace
I love
between
him.
Yeah. So, I don't think there's any evidence it was a conspiracy, though. There is some fishy shit.
There's
definitely some
evidence.
There's some fishy shit. I think it was definitely... I definitely think Sirhan Sirhan killed him. But certainly the stuff about the polka dot dress girl is weird.
It's interesting, yeah.
But I mean, guys, it was the 60s. What girl wasn't wearing a polka dot dress?
This is a good point.
There was another woman at the scene who was wearing a polka dot dress. It didn't match the color, and her hair was different from the supposed polka dot dress woman. And she was a fucking hippie. Like, she's got this hippie-ass, yellow, kind of psychedelic polka dot dress on.
She's all women's rights and men's violence and
Yeah, it's like any episode of that fucking Mad Men.
Yeah.
She's like that hypocritical liberal meme, basically.
Oh, Ryan Gosling? Hey, girl?
Yeah.
Hey, girl. I'm a liberal.
But, so I think that's 2-1. So, Gene, I'm sorry. You're going to have to go in the dunk tank.
Can we get a sound effect of the dunk tank? The dunk tank, and then also a book. Every time we make a decision at the end, a book closes.
My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own deep despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God."
All right, so we love our fans on this show. They are great people. Appreciate all the support they give us and all the 5-star ratings they give us on iTunes that will one day get us into fucking new and noteworthy.
Yeah. All the kisses that they give us.
We also have
I said all the kisses that they give us. We appreciate those.
You're getting kisses? Is this, they're trying to steal your soul? Like the busboy at the Ambassador?
Yeah.
Yeah, God, maybe. I don't know.
They're getting kisses.
I appreciate it when they stop us in the street and give us kisses.
Man, you're getting fucking kisses?
Yep.
Hershey's or Lipsies?
Hershey? Yeah, no. Lip kisses.
Lip kisses? Wow.
Yeah. Dude. Or lip and... Yeah, kisses with lips. Mostly on the cheek.
Eskimo?
Sometimes on the forehead.
What about on the wiener?
Come on, Lee. This is a family program.
Yeah, that's only Gamer 337.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, God. But sometimes our fans call our hotline, which is 413-225-1963, and I've got 2 pretty good calls for us today.
Oh, all cool. Right.
Hey, Inside Jobs. So I followed the money, and all it led me to was this shitty podcast where they misquote Jurassic Park and are racist towards Holocaust deniers. Brian, if life finds a way... But while we're on the topic, you did grace over one of the greatest inside jobs in history, which is the Dennis Nedry affair. I'm going to do an episode on that, but don't fuck it up too bad. I want to say that you can't leave sarcastic 5 stars on iTunes. I tried. It doesn't work. It ends up just being really encouraging. And I agree with the caller that said that Brian has a stupid head. That is true. I want to say for the record, I'm not Gamer337, but Lee, I guess Lee didn't sleep with my girlfriend at college, but he did get a quick and embarrassing blowjob from my girlfriend. So congratulations, but he's still a charmer. I want to say, this podcast was made a lot better this week because of that sweet banger story. So keep the banger stories coming. Keep the rest to yourselves. Till then. Fuck you guys.
Oh, man.
Yeah, bravo. Wow.
That is the best phone call we have ever gotten.
Well, I would like to apologize for misquoting Jurassic Park. That is unforgivable.
Yeah, Jesus.
But he does raise a very good point. We should do the Dennis Nedry inside job.
Yeah, that might have to be our next episode.
Dotson, we got Dotson here.
Oh, that's my favorite Dennis Nedry quote.
Man, who is Dennis Nedry working for? Do you think it was Monsanto?
It's supposed to be the other company, right?
Yeah, it's this other company that is a genetics company. InGen, I think?
No, InGen.
No, InGen was the company. That was John Hammond's company.
Yeah.
Okay, well, since he's asked for it, one banger story. When I was a kid, Banger had a, there was like a kind of cellar under the house, and Banger told me
buried the animals he murdered.
Yeah, and Banger told me that that is...
And then Banger went running by in a polka dot dress. We got him.
Banger convinced me it was Mario Land, and I believe it to this day. So yeah, under Rusty's Banger's house in Sonora is Mario Land.
But we got another call, and this one is from a fan who likes us.
Oh, cool.
Hey, this is Tristan from Detroit. I was wondering about a local conspiracy that is of national interest. About what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. I know from living in Detroit that only a few months ago they decided to try and dig up somebody's driveway to look underneath to see if Jimmy Hoffa got buried underneath there before they had paved it. So somebody must give a shit about that stuff still. Good job with the podcast. Talk to you never, I guess.
Man, so I really liked that call from Tristan from Detroit until the end, where he sounded so sad.
Yeah, I hope that I talk to you ever.
Yeah, he sounds like a cool guy who lives in Detroit.
Tell you what, if you call in right now, we will talk to you on the air.
Or if you come see my improv show this Friday, I will talk to you.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, 8 p.m.
Brian is thinking of a vacation to Detroit, so you got an extra room. Or even just a king-size bed.
Or king-size. I won't settle for anything less.
I love those...
it has to be a California king.
I love a good photo essay about abandoned buildings in Detroit. Like, look at this once...
Good God! I saw one of those, too.
Look at this gorgeous... used to be a gorgeous theater that's now filled with refuse. And lots of... Like, Detroit... You know, it is one of America's greatest cities, and it needs a jump start of sorts. And I'm confident that it'll have a renaissance.
But on to his point about Jimmy Hoffa. That's
a good conspiracy.
Sweet. That would also give me an excuse to watch the movie Hoffa, directed by Danny DeVito.
You're only going to watch half of it, though.
Danny DeVito directed that movie?
Oh, that was great. I loved it.
Wait, what was great?
He said, you're only going to watch Hoffa it. yes, Danny DeVito directed that.
Danny DeVito. Danny Taco Bell Doritos Locos.
Yeah, it stars Danny DeVito and Jack Nicholson's prosthetic face.
Man, I can't wait for the DeVito taco from Taco Bell.
It stars Danny DeVito and Drill from Twitter.
Lemon
Giant Dorito.
But yeah, no, Hoffa would be cool. I'm putting that into our list.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. But yeah, guys, I think we
got
really
some great
well.
Suggestions. Nedry and Hoffa.
I think they were working together. Yeah. Well, we all know that Bobby Kennedy was after Hoffa, and his Teamsters. Yeah.
Do you think Nedry was programmed to go to the Dilophosaurus cage, and then so he'd get blinded by him?
Dilophosaurus.
Yeah, I said that, Dilophosaurus.
Oh, I thought you said Diplodocus.
No, Brian.
Watch your mouth.
Get your head out of your ass.
Killing me, Gene.
Yeah, I said, do you think he's Saurus?
Guys, I think we did a really great public service today. Yeah. We figured out
I figured out
killed RFK.
Happened. Yeah.
I really enjoyed hearing from our fans. If you want to get in touch with us, you can call our hotline 413-225-1963.
I'm at Internet Batman on the Twitter, and we are at Inside Jobs, right?
At Inside Jobs Cast. And you can also email us insidejobscast@gmail.com. And we would love to hear from you. I have a rough week coming up.
So Brian would love it if you would like him on his Facebook page.
But yeah, if you get in touch with the show, we will be sure to get back to you. It would be great because this show is fun to do and it's fun to hear that people like it. Gentlemen, I just want to thank you as well for joining me on this beautiful Sunday evening.
You're welcome, Brian. It was a pleasure to be on the show with you today.
Thank you both, gentlemen. It was a pleasure to be on the show, too. Brian programmed us to say this.
All right.
And then programmed us to not say that we said it.
Well, I'm going to embed a lot of...
content?
Subtle messages into the show, programming the audience to go on iTunes and rate us five fars. Fuck. To
five
go on
farts.
iTunes and... Yeah, to go on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, and to listen to us when we come back in 2 weeks for another brand spanking new episode of Inside Jobs. Until then, follow the money.